And just to remind you, the last story was published on April the 1st. So our third feature today is by Daniel Bardsley, who tells the remarkable story of the Norfolk-born circus owner who inspired a beetle. The story is read by Chris Speak.
The blue plaques that dot Norwich highlight countless fascinating buildings and individuals from the city's long and incredibly rich history. And perhaps the most unlikely tale of them all is that of Pablo Funke, whose blue plaque sits on the John Lewis store in All Saints Green. Funke was one of Britain's most celebrated circus artists and owners of the 19th century, performing to thousands around the country during the Big Top's heyday. His life was a roller coaster of sell-out shows and financial despair, of sublime professional skill and terrible personal tragedy. What made his achievements all the more remarkable was that he had a particularly modest start to life, having been born, it is thought, in a workhouse. Moreover, at a time when Britain was much less diverse than it is now, he stood out amongst his peers for being black. In recent decades, Funke has caught the attention of academics and writers at home and abroad and been listed amongst the 100 most significant black Britons. This is not solely due to his extraordinarily professional achievements. Instead, the continued interest, 145 years after his death, is partly thanks to another very different entertainer, John Lennon. In early 1967, the Beatle bought a vintage poster advertising a circus performance in Rochdale by Pablo Funke's Circus Royal, and that was staged to raise funds for Mr. Kite. This poster inspired Lennon, who, helped by Paul McCartney, wrote the song Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, which mentioned Funke and some of the acts in the show. To be featured in any Beatles song offers a degree of immortality, but especially so in this case, as the track is included on perhaps the group's most celebrated album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Pablo Funke was the stage name of William Darby, who, according to the blue plaque, was born in 1810. At around this time, there were between 10,000 and 20,000 black people in Britain, probably about three-quarters of them men, and recent written accounts highlight others in Norwich at the time who were salesmen or itinerant traders. And their status was changing. Britain legislated against the slave trade in 1807 and banned slavery itself in the British Empire in 1833. Darby was thought to be the youngest child of John Darby, a black man who worked as a butler, and Mary, a white woman whose maiden name was Stamp. Given John Darby's line of work, Dr. Chaser said it was most likely that he came to Britain from the Caribbean, where he said, domestic servants are very carefully trained, rather than Africa. The younger Darby, who lived close to where his blue pack is located, is said to have given his first performance in a circus in Norwich in Boxing Day in 1821 under his own name. But soon he took on a more colourful moniker, Pablo Funke. He was one of the several black circus performers at the time, a line of work which they may have gravitated to because, said Ms. Dr. Chater, they were at the time seen as slightly exotic. Darby, or Funke, joined a circus run by a man called William Batty, and by all accounts he was adept at training and handling horses, but also skilled as a tightrope walker and trapeze artist, among other things. This was a heady time when the circus held a far more prominent place in society than it does now. Before music halls and cinemas began to eat into the audience numbers, circuses could set up camp and play to packed houses night after night for long periods. In the early 1840s, Darby struck out on his own circus company, making him Britain's first black circus owner, and he became a fixture in the north of England, performing principally in Lancashire and Yorkshire, although he also travelled further afield, including to Ireland. In 1843, a couple of years after forming his company, Darby went on the benefit gig for some of his former performers that were advertised on the poster seen by John Lennon. Indeed, much of Darby's professional success has been credited to his use of eye-catching advertising posters. He said, according to one account, he'd based his company for a time in a specially built 3,000-seater auditorium in Manchester, although there are also reports of terrible financial lows, of legal action against former employees, and of having to pare the company back to the minimum because of financial strife. What must have been the lowest point in Darby's career is recorded on the memorial in Leeds above his wife's grave. Her death in 1848 states, "It was occasioned by the falling of a portion of the circus erected in King Charles Croft, Leeds." Apparently a wooden grandstand said to have been brought from another circus and already partially dismantled collapsed, and Susanna, who was working in the box office, was struck on the head by flying pieces of metal and timber. In an unpleasant twist, that evening's takings are said to have been stolen by a cold-hearted thief. But in keeping with the entertainment adage that the show must go on, Darby's days as a circus owner were far from over, and he also soon remarried, taking a much younger wife, Elizabeth. And some of the couple's children joined the circus, but in succeeding decades, things became tougher as audiences for the Big Top began to dwindle. Darby is said to have been almost penniless by the time he died in 1871, living in a Stockport inn. Pablo Fanque was unusual in that he was a relatively successful entrepreneur and one of the few to establish himself in the circus world in that way, said Hakimadi, who is professor of the history of Africa and the African diaspora at the University of Chichester. He's historically important in the sense that he's a first and unusual. What his life does show is the variety of experience and occupations that British-born black people might have had at that time. Trapeze artist, horseman and businessman, William Darby, although perhaps not Norwich's most famous son, certainly lays claim to being one of its most fascinating.